podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Welcome to the Fatback 4 for this Sunday evening. Liverpool 2, Man City 2 at Anfield today in the Premier League. I'm exhausted after. I don't know about the rest of you. I'm back on the drink and everything because of it. I was off the drink and now I'm back on it.
I was going to say that lasted long.
No, well, it turns out... Three cans of Guinness in the fridge, and I went, all right, come on, let's have it. Why not? On tonight's show, Liverpool 2, Man City 2, of course. Game of two halves. Do people feel that was the way? That Salah goal we're going to have to talk about. And possibly that the draw was, I think, a fair result. And I don't know if I get many arguments out of these lads here tonight. With me, I have Steve, the Man City fan, who, in fairness to him, left Anfield, got home. Stuck this straight on, ate loads of chocolate before he started, so he's ready to go. He's had a great day out, shouting at Man City buses amongst the Liverpool mob, apparently on the Anfield Road, having a great time. Yeah. While Liverpool fans stared at him going, who is this nutter? And that's a quote. Grizz is with us as well, and of course Keith. Lads, I want to start off with just your initial feelings after the game, because it was so tiring watching it. Never mind, you know, Steve's at the game, but we're watching it from home or in pubs or wherever we're watching it. It was just a madness. And you know what, Steve, I'll come to you first because you were there. We spoke just before we came on live here. It's just different levels, Steve. This game of football is a different level to anything you see in the Premier League, in my opinion. And it showed today in different areas, but it was a ridiculous game of football.
Yeah, it was one of the most entertaining games of football I've seen for a long, long while. We went to Chelsea last week. Similar, we had to play well. It was nervous. You get that feeling where you know that if there's a mistake in it, you know you're going to get punished. And obviously our previous record at Anfield has been bad. So I always had them nerves going to Anfield. It's not been a happy hunting ground for us. But the way we started off the game was positive. You could feel a little bit of confidence in the City end as well. You know what I mean? We were taking the game to Liverpool a little bit. You knew the quality was there, but we've played Chelsea and Paris this week and played absolutely fantastic in every game. So we knew we were going to turn up. But first half, like you say, first 15 minutes was a bit of a ding-dong. Second half of the first half, you know, towards the end, City turned the screw and we could have scored three goals. I mean, I think Foden went through, tried to round Alisson. Grealish had a couple he missed. De Bruyne with a header at the back post. So we were like, is this going to be the same old story here now? Are we going to dominate this game and end up losing? And obviously, you know, we went behind, and then a lot of the older City fans in the City end near me was like, same old shit. We've gone behind. The crowd's up now. That's it. You know what I mean? The guy in front of me was like, that's it. The crowd are up. We've lost it. Our heads have gone. You know what I mean? But listen, I've got to give credit to my team. They dug deep. And a year ago, we wouldn't have won that game. We wouldn't have got anything from the game. We wouldn't have got anything from it. We'd have just crumbled. You'd have won. It'd have been party time and we'd have gone home with our tails between our legs. But we showed a bit of character today. And like you say, I think overall, the result was fair. The Liverpool fans coming out the ground I spoke to was like, really enjoyed the game. We really enjoyed the game. And like you say, both of them teams are going to be in the mix for the title. But the thing that these two teams have got for me, we can go on them runs. Me and Grizz speak about it all the time. We can go on them runs anytime we want. And I think one of us is going to do it. I think the title is between us two. No disrespect to Chelsea, but they're not in the same league as Liverpool for me. And they're not in the same league as us. And I tell you what, Pep Guardiola must be sat there thinking, if only I'd have bought a striker, because if we're playing like that with no striker, mate, if we get a striker, we're going up another level. But I thought I'd have a special mention for Mo Salah. I've got to have a special mention for Phil Foden. And Bernardo Silva, when he's running around the midfield like a mouse with a load of cats chasing him, it was unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that. You know what I mean? But it was... No, but look, from a Manchester City point of view, I'm a happy man tonight. It's not a happy hunting ground. We've come away with a point, with 4 points from Chelsea and Liverpool. I think we're happy. We're over the moon. But like you say, it could have gone either way. And Liverpool, I've got to say, I like Curtis Jones in the middle. I thought he was great. I just thought, obviously, Milner's going to get some shit because he should have got sent off, to be fair. But he didn't have a good game because Foden tore him apart. But look, I mean, I was speaking to Grizz. I don't know about you guys, but I thought that Van Dijk kept hitting it long. So I don't know whether he's been told to do that because Matic was taking it deep. He was carrying it into midfield and causing us a bit of issue. But then Virgil just seemed to look up and look for that long pass. Now, I don't know whether he's been told to do that or does that something Virgil does all the time or does he let Matic carry it? Or I just wanted to know your opinion on that.
Does a mix of both. You will see Matt have moved up the pitch more with it than Virgil van Dijk. And Virgil van Dijk is known for this diagonal, usually into Salah's feet while Trent is overlapping when Trent plays, or to Trent, slightly not so much, there's not so much length on the pass, but it's to Trent who's looking to get into nearly an inside right channel and cause trouble. And this is where I thought Liverpool kind of double-crossed themselves, Grizz, and I'll come to you because we might as well get into it, you know. The first 15, like Steve said, is a bit of a ding-dong. You know, it's the usual Liverpool City thing. You have a go, we'll have a go. We'll have a little nibble here and you have a nibble there and we'll see what way it works out. And then it usually levels out and we see where it goes. And I felt Liverpool double-crossed themselves, Grizz, because by playing that amount of long, not long ball, but those diagonals that you're looking to hit, you're making the pitch bigger. And instead of squeezing it, by making it bigger, you're leaving more space. And that's where City really got into it because they were finding that space that was left. Instead of Liverpool being right up on top of you from the halfway line and going, right, we're playing diagonals here, but if it drops, we're all over you. And it was just a bit of a weird one for me, Grizz, from 15 to half time nearly. Could you work it out? Because I thought they double crossed themselves by trying to be a bit different, but it didn't go to their advantage at all.
I don't think it was instruction, and I didn't think it was by instruction at the time. I didn't think it was a tactic at the time, and then Jurgen Klopp has since come out and clarified that it wasn't. We played far too long, and sometimes, Gav, you got to give the opposition credit in terms of forcing us to play the wrong ball, if you know what I mean, not play the right ball. And that's what it was. Look, the first 15, 20 minutes, you know, we've done a couple of reviews. We spoke on Carnage on Thursday, and we kind of tried to dissect how the game was going to go, and we pretty much nailed it to a T in terms of everyone thought that it's going to be sort of the first 20 minutes are going to be, you know, throwing haymakers at each other. Well, I thought it wasn't going to be like that, and it turned out. The two managers and the two sets of players, literally, as you said, Gav, the first 15, 20 minutes was just like a sparring match, just to see what's happening, what's going on. And I think City's tactic, which again, I thought was going to happen, was going to, Steve, do you remember I said to you, I don't think he's going to put Grealish out on the left. I think he's going to put Foden up against Milner and give Grealish the free roll. Well, Grealish had a free roll, but he was more asked to double up on Milner. And so that's where they had their joy. I just thought, Gav, our midfield wasn't brave enough in that period that you discuss, that you talk about, between 25 to halftime. And they squeezed us so much that Virgil was forced to play, or that, like, there's always that tactic where, do you remember he played that similar balls to Mane against Bayern Munich? He tried that about 4 or 5 times, but he chose the wrong fullback to play that against. Kyle Walker's lightning fast. And he kind of had the measure of Mane with that particular tactic. So, look, that was frustrating. But, you know, everyone's talking about how Man City dominated us in that second half of the first half. And they absolutely did. They bossed it. But I still felt, I don't know how you feel, Steve, and I don't know how you guys feel, I still felt they didn't really go gung-ho for us. There was still that element of holding back one player, you know, not flooding the box. And so, therefore, it looked like there was a lot of chance or creation, but I think it could have been far worse for Liverpool. And that comes from the mutual respect from both sets of players and both sets of teams. Because even though they had possession and controlled possession at times, they didn't overcommit once, in my opinion. And I think that worked to our favour because we survived that first half by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah, do you know something? I think you're bang on. I think as good as City were for me for that 30 minutes, by finding pockets of space and, you know, nice dribbles, Bernardo Silva in particular. Well, he should, from a Liverpool point of view, Bernardo Silva should never be getting through there. You hit him and you take a free and you walk away. Liverpool are a bit too nice for me. But Keith, Grizz says something there, you know, City didn't overcommit. They were finding pockets, but they were finding pockets with those two or three, maybe four players going forward. Because as much as they may feel like they were on top, and this is why I want to get to the half-time thoughts, as much as they felt they were on top and they were finding space, Guardiola says it time and time and time again. If you overcommit against Liverpool and they turn you over, you're in serious fucking trouble. Because Liverpool can just go bang, bang, and there's a fella in on goal, and they're brilliant at it. Is that what lets City down a little bit in that half an hour? Is that, you know, going into half time where you say it's nil all, and I'm dying to hear Steve's thoughts at half time. But Keith, for you, is that where City still at that bit of don't go too mad here because we're on top and they can switch it in 15 seconds and we're a goal down?
Yeah, I mean, the way the first half panned out, I thought we were awful, you know, and it's not a disrespect to City, but I don't think it was a case of City made us look bad. I think we made City look better. And by that, City were excellent first half, don't get me wrong. I just mean, we gave up so much possession and we gave up so much territory in midfield that they had a field day. And I'd love to hear Steve's thoughts on going in at halftime, as you say, Gav. They dominated us so much and had us on the ropes, but didn't really create too many chances. Like, clear cut, I think there's only one shot on Alisson's goal in the first half. And something you touched on, Steve, was the lack of a striker in that Man City team. And I think it really showed because, you know, you dominate possession, and there's nobody, a target man, let's say, to put it in. And I felt, if that was Liverpool going in, I'd have been like, oh, another one of these days. We're not walking the keeper enough. We're having all this possession. We're having all this. Like, Milner is getting absolute outed by Phil Foden. I think, personally, he was let down by his midfield cover. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Milner, we all know he's 35. We know what you get out of James Milner. And if you're going to have someone like Phil Foden, who was quick and is tricky, he needs help. And he didn't get it. And I just felt City were just turning that screw. But it was more so that we were just letting them. And it really, that was what annoyed me the most. You know, I haven't seen us play that bad in a while. And certainly not in a big game like that. Because something Shawnee always says on this, when this game especially comes up, is big boy football. They're the best two teams in the country by a mile. By a country mile. Steve said at the start, you know, the likes of Chelsea and Manchester United will get a lot of press and a lot of hype because people want someone else to come in and challenge. But these are the best two teams, and they showed it again today. That first half, we just couldn't get a foothold in the game. And it's easy to blame individuals. Like I said, Milner's getting a lot of the stick, but the midfield didn't work. I don't think the attack worked. And the defence wasn't working. And Alisson was looking dodgy. Like, literally every facet of our team in the first half, with the exception of Joel Matip, were way off the pace in that game.
Do you know something? I don't disagree with anything you've said there, but I genuinely thought, and I kind of have to caveat this by saying, I thought City were really, really good, right? But everything we tried, it was like everything I was watching, and taking into the consideration that City were really good, everything I was watching from Liverpool was like, it was like they were trying to do something different, and it didn't work. And they didn't know how to revert, you know, because we've seen, look, City have come to Anfield and played us at the Etihad and in Europe or wherever, numerous, many times in the last 4 or 5 years, right? And we know what we're going to get. City know what they're going to get. and Liverpool know what they're going to get. And usually they just say, right, I tell you what, we're going to play both our way and you're going to play yours. And it's usually a moment of madness or a moment of genius that decides the game, right? But today I felt at Liverpool, I was looking going, what are we trying to do here? And it was just like we were stuck in gear. We couldn't turn, you know, we couldn't even put it into reverse to go back and say, right, let's go back to the first 15. We just seemed caught and City were on top of us. It was a strange one to watch for me for that half an hour.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know, before I get to Steve Grizz, I'll come back to you. You just wanted half time and you knew you weren't going to come out that bad in the second half. You just knew it. You just wanted half time and that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the biggest sigh of relief because you just know the calibre of Klopp as a coach. He will not allow that to happen again in that second 45. Because as you say, the dominance in that coming to the end was total, basically. See, I slightly disagree with Keith in terms of we made City look better than they were. I think that was City continuing from their performance against Chelsea. I think they deployed the same tactics near enough. It's just that I don't know what I put it down to. Maybe our resolution, mental strength, just kept the crowd just kept us in it, just kept us going. Because that first 45 minutes would have put a lot of teams away, a lot of teams, because they were dominating. And I think we, you know, because we saw certain clips of Klopp shouting, "Be braver! We're not brave enough." It was just a case of none of our six, seven, I think even Fabinho, six, seven players not being able to receive the ball under pressure like they were able to. I thought Silva and Grealish and Foden in that respect were a total different level to us in the first half. But coming in at 45 minutes, I thought it's like a victory. Yep. Honestly, it felt like a victory. That we're 0-0, clean slate, we will not be that fucking bad again. And that's exactly what happened.
Well, Ramirez says here in the super chat, he says, a great game, lads. I still think we have problems defensively in our midfield, especially when we lose the ball in transition. I also think Hendo's a bit off. Feels like a great point, but 2 points dropped too. I know where he's coming from because you go twice ahead. And, Steve, I'm going to come to you about how you felt at half-time, right? Because, and also how you felt about how it was going in midfield, because you've already touched on, you know, you haven't got an out-and-out striker in the side, or the striker that you do have isn't playing up front, if you get me. And I'm looking at our midfield, and I have to be honest with you, I thought our midfield was appalling today, all right? And again, some of that is down to City being really good, but I felt a bit sorry for Fabinho, because I thought Curtis Jones got a bit of a lesson today in the actual levels that you have to get to, in my opinion. I think he's a really, really good player. He was unbelievable during the week in Europe, but this was another level again. I think he kind of found that today. I thought Henderson was poor. That's it. He was just poor. I think in his covering of Milner, poor. You know, and this idea of him trying to get forward up the pitch, because it is something that Liverpool are trying to do with their midfielders, I don't know how much it's, not that it's not suiting him, but I just don't know if he's got into that rhythm yet, because he has been out for a bit. But I thought he was overall poor. And Fabinho, for me, suffered because of it, because he is looking at these two players that are going, you're not doing what you usually do. And then most of the team weren't, but you're not doing what you usually do. And Fabinho's trying to be here and he's trying to be there, and it made Fabinho look a bit ragged. But what did you think of the midfield battle? And what was your thoughts at half-time? Because there's no doubt in my mind, Steve, at half-time you thought, oh, we should be one up here. We have to be ahead after being that dominant.
Yeah. Well, Rodri has been immense for us this season. I mean, he's really growing into the Manchester City midfield. Last few years, there was doubts about him whether he could do that role. And at the end of the day, he was great today. Bernardo gives us the energy in there. Kevin De Bruyne, to be honest, was a little bit sloppy. He looked tired, a little bit leggy. But one thing I will say about City, when Grealish plays that false nine, he doesn't press high enough or fast enough for me. I thought Van Dijk and Matip had it quite easy in the first half, knocking it between themselves and bringing it out. When, I don't know if you noticed, when we brought Sterling on, I think he improved us. I think Sterling was putting it on him a little bit, and I think they couldn't get too close to him because Sterling has got that touch and can be away. Whereas with Grealish, he's a bit, I don't know, he just jogs around a little bit, you know what I mean? He's better on the left. He can have a breather every now and then. When he's got a press from the front, he doesn't get time to breathe, and I think he was tired today. But at half-time, it was the same old thing. The City end was like, we're going to hammer these and get beat because that's how it was looking. It happened in Paris on the other night. We played fantastic, got beat 2-0, and you're looking at yourself thinking, how did that happen? And then when Salah slides in Mane and they score, you're just thinking, wow, because the atmosphere turned up to 200, 300 decibels then, and that's when we usually fall flat. Guardiola's getting rattled in the dugout because Milner's kicking people, and then I thought, we've lost our heads, but we didn't, you know what I mean? We stuck to the game plan, and we ended up coming out of it with a point, which is a very, very good point at a place we never get a point. But at half-time, yeah, it was same old City. We're going to throw it all away here. But the striker situation is really frustrating for me because I know that these crosses coming in the box, these pullbacks coming to the edge of the box, there's just nobody can put it in. And it's like, it's crazy. I mean, he must know, everyone knows we need a striker. And if we get a striker, I think that separates us a little bit from you. And I think it takes us up a little bit more than you. But at the minute, we're doing really well. But we need a striker. He's got to have someone lined up in January because we can't.
Why is he not going with Jesus? Sorry for cutting across here. Why is he not playing Jesus through the middle? Like, why is he going with Jesus at wide and then nobody central when Jesus is a sort of central striker? It seems like he's converted him from being a centre forward to a wide player when you need a centre forward. Do you know what I mean? Like, is it something that they just don't see them doing going forward?
No, I mean, for Brazil, Jesus plays wide. And from last season, Grizz will tell you on the Big Six, I was told that Jesus isn't then going to play wide this season. I 100% think that Harry Kane was lined up and they were told Guardiola to not worry about it. It will be done. And I think he's relaxed and not worried about it. And it's fell through at the last minute and he's thought shit. And I don't think he's happy with it because he's trying to squeeze round pegs into square holes. He's tried Sterling there. He's tried Foden there. He's tried Ferran Torres there. This is in the first 5-6 weeks of the season. So it seems to me that position is a big worry for him. And some of the games we've been in, like Southampton at home, they park the bus. But usually if you've got a recognised striker, we create that many chances, one of them goes in. We just didn't have the key to pick the lock. And I think against teams like Liverpool and Chelsea, who they think they can match you because they're a good side like you, they're going to come at you a bit. We get our chance. But against the smaller teams, they're going to shut up shop. And that's when you need your Agueros. That's where you need your Mo Salahs, your striker that's going to put the ball in the net. And that's my only fear for City at the minute.
It's you know, people are telling me in the chat here that Harp leads for you, Steve, Man City not being able to sign a striker. But in fairness, what I would say is that in all that transfer stuff, you know, I think City were absolutely all over Kane and to the point of nearly tapping him up by some of the comments coming out of the club. But I think Kane screwed you over. And I think Kane screwed you over to protect his ego and his legacy at Tottenham Hotspur. And I said it all the way through this, and the lads, Grizz and Keith will tell you, I said this on numerous occasions. Harry Kane should have went to Tottenham Hotspur and said, look, there's 100 million quid on the table. I think I should be allowed to leave, and I want to leave. I want to win trophies, and I want to do this, that, and the other. And I think I can do it at Manchester City. And in the end, he didn't. In the end, I think it was from the Harry Kane side of things. I think it was done with Manchester City. It was just a case of getting Daniel Levy to take the 100 million fee. And I think in the end, Kane looked at it and went, his ego and his legacy of Spurs got the better of him. And he said no. And I'd be surprised if they ever got back in from there. Because I think it's Harry Kane. I think it's Harry Kane that's done Manchester City, not Tottenham Hotspur, by saying 100 million quid isn't happening. Because if Harry Kane wanted to be a Manchester City player as of the 31st of August when the window closed, he could have been. He could have pushed it, and he could have been. And Daniel Levy, as pig-headed as he is, I think would have turned around and went, listen, I can't turn down 100 million. The player does not want to play for us. He's publicly said it now to every Spurs fan on this planet that he doesn't want to play for us. We're in COVID. We've taken out loans against this stadium that's cost us £1 billion and we can't put anybody in it. And he could have absolutely made it happen. And I can't see them going back now because I think Harry Kane is the one that done it to City, not Tottenham Hotspur. And I've been dying to say that to you for ages, Steve.
But you know this method of
Kane walked away from that and people went, oh, look at this. Look at him. He said the fans kept him. Fuck, would you stop it? Go on, Grizz.
You know, we're talking about sort of this method of playing without a striker because he hasn't got a striker.
Guardiola.
Do you think they dominate a game like this in terms of the midfield areas if they have a striker? Because I think his game plan has evolved into literally having five or six across there, right? Because I know we're not into heat maps as such, but it would be interesting to see a heat map if I'll probably check one later on to see how many times, Steve, that was actually players in the 18-yard box, even though you had all that domination. So, yes, absolutely, you bossed it. But sometimes it can look like an optical illusion, if you know what I mean, because you've got extra two bodies in there every time against. And I know Liverpool fans gave so much shit to our midfield today, including me. Like, including me, I was giving so much shit to our midfielders. Like, they were awful in that first 45 minutes. But when the real football man in me sits down and thinks about it and analyzes it, I was thinking, you know, that's exactly his game plan. He strangles teams. And we know that's his best form of defending as well, to just literally keep the ball away from the opposition. Now, the moment we managed to be brave in the second half, I know, Gav, so you probably want to get into the second half, We started finding pockets of space. So I think as much as, you know, you dominated, I still think if you had a target man, a striker, it changes the way your midfield sets up, Steve. And then it encourages other teams to have more of the ball, if you know what I mean. So it's a difficult one.
Sorry, there is a bit of an echo coming from Steve's side. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to knock them off and on as we need them, all right? It's just an echo when people are talking, coming out of Steve's end. So I'm just going
people
to...
People blame me as usual.
Well, it usually is you, in fairness.
This room I'm in is massive. I've lost a few quid by betting that it was Grizz. But
into the second half, and you know, my feelings on it come when halftime came. I'm in WhatsApp groups with Liverpool fans, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like Kieran Thorne says there, the first sign of bravery came from Robertson and the press on Walker, Silva, and Kevin De Bruyne, resulting in a corner, picked up the crowd, and got us into halftime. And I think he's right in what he's saying there, because I just felt at halftime, we're no way we're going to be that bad in the second half. There's not a fucking chance we're going to be that. Passive, I suppose, or second guessing ourselves, we're going to absolutely go for this. And when you look at it, start of the second half, like Keith, I come to you. No changes made, but you just know they're coming out, and there's just no way that there's going to be a repeat of what we've just seen for the last 40 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, getting them in at half time was so, so important, because we were just waiting at the races, and you knew he was going to put a rocket up. The more I was watching it here, my missus said it to him. She goes, what's he going to say to them in there? I said, say they'd be bleeding, kicking water bottles and everything all over the place, because they were terrible. And when I said, I thought we made City look good, I think City were surprised at how poor we were. And I think that affected them in a way. You know, I think they expected us to be better in the first half as well. Second half comes, Kieran's right. You get that little bit of impetus from Robbo doing a press, and that's all we needed today, was something like that. Second half, we come out one much better. I think Jota has a couple of chances, doesn't he, early in the second half, and that sort of picks the crowd up. The crowd are going a bit mad, and you could just tell it was different from the very start. You know, I was surprised to see maybe Milner coming out for the second half. The fact that he's on a yellow card and he's just getting put on toast all for the first half, I was genuinely thought we might have saw Joe Gomez coming out there, but he sticks with it. And it is much better. And, you know, it's one thing Jurgen Klopp, he doesn't tend to throw his players under a bus. And I think he trusts that they can work their way out of a problem. And I think Milner certainly improved in the second half. I think City maybe were a bit, I don't know, a bit shocked. As Steve said, you know, sometimes the crowd can pick it up a bit and same old, but their players seem to realise that, right, Liverpool are now involved in this game and they surrendered possession a bit to us in the second half. We were snapping into tackles. We were pressing, which we didn't do in the first half, and that gave us the chance. But we come out and it's like a totally different beast in that second half. And as the game is going on, you know, we needed the midfield players. As Grizz said, you know, everyone was critical of the midfield players. I thought Curtis Jones was awful in the first half, but I thought even from the start of the second half, he started trying to get on the ball and move it forward. We know he's not a defensive-minded player. He's a forward-thinking midfielder. Henderson was atrocious, and he was starting to get on the ball. Fabinho was starting to get on the ball. They were starting to win their tackles, and you just sensed from the start of the second half that it was going to be a better performance. And the crowd reacted to that. And Steve was there, and he'll probably confirm that. You know, once the second half, we're getting a few chances, the crowd are getting up, and then we get the goal, and the crowd reacted to it. And we needed it because we were so poor in that first half to get out and just to get the early chances that we did in the second half, it lifted everyone. And the performance just grew from there.
It needed a lift because, look, we talk about leaders in this side, and there's loads of them. But like I'm looking at two in particular would be Henderson and Fabinho. And I'm looking at that last half an hour, that first half, and I'm saying to myself, are either of these not opening their mouth and saying, lads, whatever we're trying here is simply not working. You know, we're being outnumbered. Like Grizz makes a great point about City literally getting 5-6 bodies in that middle third and looking to overrun you and then break from there and see what you can do. Is nobody turning around and saying, this is not working? And it must have been said at half time because Liverpool come out and look like Liverpool. They come out, there's tempo, they're moving it fast, they're snapping into tackles, they're getting up and down wings, they're getting in people's faces. And I'm not saying Liverpool just come out and be physical and that's what they do. They play really, really good football, Liverpool. But part of them being able to play really good football is the fact that they're in your face, they're physical, they're going to work you, they're going to move the ball a lot quicker. And that's what they've done. And I want to go into the goals because there's four of them and there's a bit to get through in them. And Grizz, I'm going to come to you first because Sadio Mane opens the scoring on the 59th minute. Great move by Salah, gets away down the right wing, cuts in slightly. His pace takes him away from the City midfield. And it's a nice little move by Mane to get across the front of the defender. And it's a good finish. I want to ask you what you think of that. What do you think of the goal? And did it come out of the blue of you? And I want to follow that up by going to Steve and what he thinks of it, because I have a little issue with Man City on this one.
Came out of the blue, possibly, but as Keith said, like, second half was far more, I don't know what the word is, snappier from us.
Yeah.
Like, everything what we'd done was quicker. So the press was quicker, the passing was quicker, you know, in their faces more. I don't think, like Steve said, in the first half, we played so many long balls into channels. I don't think we'd done that in the second half. I think we started fizzing the ball into midfield. We were braver. And when I mean braver, I don't mean sort of going into tackles and head first challenges, whatever. I mean on the ball, being able to receive the ball. And it was a patient play that enabled Salah to get the ball at his feet up against Cancelo. Because in that first half, Cancelo didn't cross the halfway line. Like he literally... And Salah, and I know a lot of people are slating Henderson for not helping out Milner. I don't think Salah helped much as well. But I think, again, that was bravado from the managers, Gav. I think Klopp said, fine, we'll risk it. I want you isolating Cancelo every possible chance you have. And it was probably the first time in the game that he managed to isolate him where Rodri couldn't get across. And I think he skips the ball over Cancelo when he's gone. And when Salah's cutting in like that, you either take a yellow card or you let him go. And they let him go. And the timing of the Mane run was finally perfect because he'd been trying to do that run forever in that first half. And he just wouldn't get past. Who's your right centre-back? Diaz, isn't it? He wouldn't be able to get past your right centre-back. But this time he gets right across Gav, and Salah sees that the timing of the pass is brilliant, and the finish, we've seen Sadio Mane really struggle with his finishing last few weeks. I mean, he scored a couple of tap-ins and a couple of scrappy goals, whatever, but this was the old Sadio Mane. He didn't have to do much. One touch, instinctive bang. He knew, you know, didn't have to think about it. Just one touch and shoot, and that's when you find Sadio Mane at his best.
Similar to Norwich, wasn't it, Grizz? Was it Norwich in the first day? It just comes into him and he smacks it. No thinking.
No thinking. Absolutely.
Burnley at home.
Burnley. But it was Burnley, yeah. But again, it's all about that run. And we've seen that run from the opposites. Like, we've seen Salah do that run for season upon season now, haven't we? And Mane coming in and finding that pass. This time, it was beautiful to see Mohamed Salah, who often gets criticised for not being able to do anything apart from just score goals, which is quite unique, if you ask me. But he's able to create something out of nothing. Because as you say, Gav, it was kind of something out of nothing. It was just a moment of individual brilliance and then finding the right pass at the right time. I said the two centre-backs of Man City, well, the one thing they struggle with is movement and pace. And that was a prime example of it.
Steve, I'm going to bring you in because the issue I have with Man City in this goal is, I've no issue with the goal. I'm a Liverpool fan. I was fucking delighted, I'm going to be honest. But the issue I have looking at that goal is Salah's brilliant for it because the touch on the sideline is great, his pace is great, and the angle he runs at, no one can go near him. But I have a little bit of an issue, I think, with your centre-half and maybe the goalkeeper as well. Because Mane doesn't make a mad darting move. He's in front of your defender and he just kind of changes the way he's running. And he looks so slow to react to it. And I thought your keeper was slow in coming out as well. Did you think that from behind the goal? Did you think he's being left there for no reason? And the keeper doesn't do an awful lot for me.
Yeah, I mean, Salah's move on the touchline. Obviously, if I'm Cancelo, I'm just rattling him there. I'm just rattling him or gripping him or something. But he come in and the ball to Mane was great. Yeah, Diaz was left in no man's land. He seemed to be well off the play. But the thing I think with Diaz, he overthinks a lot of things because he's trying to do every man's job. He's one of these like lieutenants who thinks he does everyone's job. And sometimes he just needs to do his own job. So he was probably thinking of Salah going to come running at him. So he didn't know whether to go to him or watch Mane. So he sort of was in no man's land. And then when Salah switched to play, he's left him a yard behind. And then obviously, yeah, Ederson probably could have come out quicker, but it was a great finish, to be fair.
It was a good finish, I'll say that much.
It was a great finish. I was right behind it and he rattled it in. So I've got not a lot of complaints. I mean, Ruben Diaz is massive to everything that we do. Do you know what I mean? And he does have done little lapses, but I'm not going to get on his case for that. Same with Messi the other night for Paris. Laporte was caught in no man's land. He didn't know whether to go with a runner or go with Messi because Messi jinked his shoulder one way. Laporte spun his body thinking Messi was sliding someone in. Then Messi took a touch to his left, which left Laporte lopsided, and then he curled it in the top corner. So it is what it is, but... No, I'm just going to say it was a great goal. And Mo Salah, I don't understand why some of these people go on about Mo Salah like he's not an absolute world-class player. The guy's dangerous. Every time he gets the ball, you know something's going to happen with him. And obviously, we're going to touch on that second goal in a minute, but it's just ridiculous, man. Ridiculous.
He is. He's a ridiculous player. And, you know, you're a Man City fan saying that, and you get a lot of fans of opposition clubs that will say, what about this, what about that? And I'm kind of going, what about what? You know, he's won a league title, he's won a European Cup, and he's this is his fifth season, and if he keeps going on the way he's going on, he'll do 30 to 40 goals this season. You know, he's just outrageous. Keith, Liverpool make a 1-0, and you know, after such a dodgy kind of end to the first half, and a much more improved start to the second half, Liverpool done what City couldn't do in the first half by capitalising, you know, and getting that goal and saying, right, we've had a bit of, you know, I'm not talking about pulling City apart, but being much more in their face, playing their football, playing their tempo, trying to make our mark on this game, and we take advantage. We do take advantage, and we're a really good goal, but City equalise, and as good as Mane's goal is, and I'm annoyed at Liverpool for this goal, but I have to be honest with you, Phil Foden is a fucking ridiculous footballer. He's a ridiculous.
You know what? He took his touch. That touch he took. He took it. It was a bit heavy. He pushed it a bit wide, but he just spun his body that much, put it in. And I tell you what, Phil Foden is unbelievable. And I spoke to a Liverpool fan coming out, and he said, just as we thought we got rid of Leroy Sané, because Leroy Sané always had a good game against Liverpool, he went, now you've just got Phil Foden who's took his place. And I thought, yeah, well, fair play. We needed somebody to have a good game against Liverpool. But he did. He had Milner all day today. He was sucking him in left, right and centre. But Phil Foden, he's just a fantastic talent. You know what I mean? He carries on the way he's going, and it's going to be one of the best in the world.
Well, AS must have been the man you were speaking to coming out of Anfield, because he says, I saw the back of an annoyingly tall player in Sané in these games, but see, even other than Foden, Mo Salah, though, unbelievable.
I'll give a bit of credit, though, to Jesus, because he come in from the right, come right across, and he played a nice pass through to him, you know what I mean? And Gabriel's, everyone like was laughing at me because I call him Jesus, but it's a Mancunian thing. He's the only Jesus in my life, so he is Jesus to me. You know what I mean? But he did well. And the goal, and what that goal did, it shut the crowd up. It shut the crowd up because the place was bouncing from the rafters, man. And it shut them up like bump. And I thought, right, this is it now. They're not as confident because they've seen us score now. They're not as confident. But it was one of them games. It was just, I come in and Mrs. was like, are you happy? And I was like, yeah, I'm happy. I was like, I just enjoyed the game today. Everything about it, the atmosphere, the bit of touchline, spat, Pep, couple of dodgy yellow cards, defending, goals, Bernardo Silva running. It just had everything for me, you know what I mean? And that's what football's about for me. But today was just, and a lot of Liverpool fans are going a bit hard on Liverpool. But I found that the Chelsea fans did that last week, saying, oh, Tuchel set them up negative, this, that, and the other. It's not negative. When that Manchester City team are playing like that and keeping the ball, you can only play one way, because if you start to come out and try to be gung-ho, they're just going to rip you apart. So you've got to be patient. I'd say patient. And Liverpool were patient. They got to half-time, realised what they needed to do, got their noses in front, and obviously City came back. Chelsea couldn't do that last week. You have to be brave, and Chelsea didn't want to be brave. They just wanted to be very cautious. Liverpool, I thought, coming out in the second half, they thought, you know what, let's have a little bit of a go. And they did, and all credit to them.
All credit, but like, we'll, when we get to the end, we'll talk on our feelings after the game and overall. But like, Keith, I'm annoyed at, like, Jesus makes a nice room. I'm not going to call him Jesus. I have a Jesus in my life, so I have to call him Jesus.
Picture of him on the wall there,
yeah,
on top of the
mantle. Sure, I fucking do 2 decades of the rosary before I come onto most pods. But, like, he makes an intelligent run inside because he's keeping the ball and he's coming towards his own players looking for options. You know, and I'm annoyed, Keith, because I'm saying to myself, you just hit him. Now, we're saying that an awful lot in this podcast. He should have hit him. He should have hit him. But it's true, Keith. There's a couple of players there. I think Jones, Fabinho. Just hit him. And because it's in such a confined space, if you hit him there, you'll probably get a free. You won't get a yellow because he's not on the break. You know, he's in a confined space. Yeah. You can genuinely go for the ball and, you know, may hit him on the ball and get a free against you. That's fine. But having said that, Keith, the touch from Foden is not great. But do you know what reminded me of the finish? And it's not exactly the same, but it's Michael Owen at Cardiff. Away, or not away, in the cup final in 2001. It's the only spot Foden can put it to beat Alisson.
Yeah.
And I tell you how good it is. When he hits it, Alisson nearly, not pulls his hand away from it, but nearly looks at going, fuck, that is just ridiculous. You can even see in Alisson's body language. It's right in against the bottom of the post, Keith. It's a brilliant finish. You can't, although you can give out about the tackling or non-tackling, it's just a fucking proper finish.
Yeah, it's a great finish. You know, if your forward is doing that, you're raving about it. He's a talent, Phil Foden. But you're right, there's one place he can hit that ball to get past Alisson, and it's gone past him in a light. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't have a chance. And the angle, as Steve said, he's moving away. The touch is heavy. He's making the angle harder for himself. But he's a player that's a confidence player, and he doesn't give a shit about that. There's no fear of him, you know, trying to set it again. It's like, right, that's the ball. That's where it is. There's the goal. I'm gonna mill that across. But it was weird because it was about 25 minutes into the second half when Man City got that. And I didn't feel there was, you know, it was out of the blue nearly that City get the goal. You know, we were on top of them, and they'd so much of the domination in the first half and didn't create the chances. Whereas this, and that's what was worrying me, was, right, they're after pulling this one out of nowhere, shut the crowd up. The place was on wheels at that stage, and then all of a sudden, bang, they get that goal and were, you know, silenced. But he's such an intelligent player, Phil Foden. And to just be able to do that at a young age, you know, Steve's right. We used to see Leroy Sané and sweat be pumping out of you because you knew what you were going to get off him. Phil Foden is that now as well. And these little runs will happen. He'll score against us again. And it'll be every time he plays against Liverpool, he scores and he'll be licking his lips. Do you know what I mean? Because whether it's Trent in there or Milner, Trent gives up chances as well for a left-sided forward because he goes forward and he doesn't always get back. So I think Foden will be looking at us every year. That'll be the first one he's looking for because he'll be saying, right, I'll chalk up a couple of goals. There's a goal bonus for me now, because players get into that psyche of, I love playing against. We had Mane against Crystal Palace when he said he scored in 9 of 11 or something against Palace, and he just knows. And Foden's going to be like that with us, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know what? He is one of those players, but Foden's going to be like that for most teams. You know, I think if you find the right position for him game to game, because he's so flexible. If you find the position, right position for him game to game, he's going to hurt teams and players. He hurt Milner today, but he's going to hurt players. Now, Grizz, I'm going to let you go with this. First of all, James Milner. Now the screams for a second yellow. I've read somewhere that the referee gives the free against Jordan Henderson.
Yeah.
And the Milner thing happens after, so that's why the yellow isn't given, which puts a different spin in it. Pep's having an absolute another breakdown over this. But that might explain it, because under no circumstances, Chris, is James Milner making that tackle and not being sent off. Because now, having said that, if the ref turned around and went, no, he's going down under the Bernardo Silva, wasn't it? He's going down underneath the Henderson challenge. Milner just happens to fucking be, you know, a second impact. Fine. But he's absolutely blessed, Chris. He's absolutely blessed not to be red carded.
Literally. There's no other... I can't give
Jesus,
another side.
Jesus blessed him.
Jesus blessed him. Look, you've made... A very able excuse, or
what? No, I'm not making an excuse. That's just something I read before we
came. Yeah. I mean, I just put it down to, look, how players can get caught up in a moment of a game with a crowd and the players and everything. For example, we discussed Curtis Jones not being able to get into the game and getting over by the crowd. And referees are human as well. It happens. And I genuinely think the referee lost it there for a second. He wasn't in control of his thought process there. I think that was at the... What was the score at the time? It was 1-1, wasn't it? And
yeah.
Was it 1-1?
Yeah, because...
It was, he because makes they got mad on the goal.
He makes a tackle. It's a yellow card. Or Henderson's given the free against him. They're going mad for the second yellow. The game goes on, and then literally Jones gives it to Salah. He scores, because I think Bernardo Silva is booked after the Liverpool goal for dissent.
Pep and about Bernardo the tackle are
both by Milner.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Bernardo does a tactical foul later on as well on a yellow, and that's not given either. But that's not talked about, obviously. But there's no getting away from it. Absolutely got away with one there. That could have been a game changer. You know, we don't know. You know, we often discuss 10 men can be far more difficult to play against, whatever. But yeah, you just put it down to sort of, we've discussed the refereeing to death, hasn't it? It's inadequate refereeing. I mean, even as Liverpool fans, we know that's a yellow. You know, it's blatant trip, stopping a player from progressing, like blatantly, in terms of, it's not a 50-50 challenge where you can dispute if it's a yellow or not. But when someone goes past and you trip him up, that's a yellow card in every level of the game. You're on mute, Steve.
No, it's okay. I have him on mute. Oh. Don't worry.
Well, you mentioned the other night to everybody to back Milner for a yellow card. Yeah. And he got the yellow card. But my bet I had today for £2,500 was Cancelo to be booked, Milner to be booked. I was waiting on Rodri for $2,500. And Rodri was kicking a few people, and I was like, book him.
Steve was willing for Rodri to give away a pen and a yellow card just for a few quid. I like that. I like that. But Grizz, I'll stay with you because the red card doesn't happen. You know, we've seen some reason behind it. David Newell says there, the foul was given against Hendo, not Milner. Silva was already going down from the Hendo foul. That's why Milner never got sent off. So that makes a bit of sense. All right. But I still think he's blessed because Milner doesn't know that. Not when he hits him, he doesn't know him. And it's one of those where I still think we get away with him just by the skin of our teeth. But I'm going to stay with you, Grizz, and everyone's going to have a word on this. And I know Steve will even be generous in talking about this. That goal from Mo Salah, and I tweeted earlier, that goal from Mo Salah puts the end of the debate with him or Suarez at Liverpool for me, because he goes down as an all-time great for me, Salah, and because he's absolutely ridiculous. And I think we're at the stage now, Grizz, where we're at the stage with Mo Salah where I think Barcelona were a couple of years ago, Lionel Messi, where you just give him, not give him what he wants, because I think that's a ridiculous statement to make, but you need to pay the man. And you need to say he's 31 when this contract ends, I think. I think about 31. And we're going to extend, say, for 3 years, right, to 34, 35, say. Do it. Because when I look at this player, I just say to myself, he's not relying on his pace as much as people actually think he does. And he's just out of this world. He's the best player in the Premier League by a fucking mile, in my opinion. Right?
I think he's the best in the world at the moment.
And probably down at the moment as the best in the world. And that goal today, Grizz, was just... he just had players falling all over the shop. It was like there was snipers taking cunts out. Right? It was like literally everywhere he turned, there was fellas just falling. It was like Warzone, right? Not me playing because I can't shoot anybody in it.
Yeah.
But a really good player of Warzone, just taking fellas out while Mo Salah just... Bates through the place, and what a fucking finish. If Foden's was good, that was as good.
Yeah, you can't touch him, man. You can't touch him. He's just, his control, close control and twist and turn in tight spaces is unbelievable. And then even I thought, well, they've pushed him a little bit wider, so there's no way he's scoring from there. And where I was row four at the side of the net where the ball hit that net. So it was right in my eye line. And how he poked that into that corner was just world class. I mean, he's just, the guy's world class. I mean, I'd give me a left arm to have him there. I'd have any of your front three at ours. We need someone like that. But him, he's just unbelievable. He's unbelievable. And he deserves all the credit. You know what I mean? And there's not what you can do. Even anyone in the city, and we just looked at each other and went, what a goal. What a goal. And we knew. And if that goal beats you, like Messi's the other night, if it beats you, you've just got to stand up, put your hands in the air and go, we got beat by a class football. And unfortunate for us, we went and got one back. But no, I've got to take my hat off to him. And at the minute, I can't argue with him. He probably is the best player in the world at the minute. The guy, when he plays the Liverpool play, and he's just ridiculous.
We often talk about Barclays moments. You know, there's been so many, and there's been, you know, Aguero's come to mind, and nothing else comes to my mind at the moment. But you know what I mean,
right?
Barclays moments.
One moment in 9 years, you're flying here.
Yeah,
not because
I think we can call them moments if there's only one.
There's only one.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because this has overtaken my emotions in terms of moments, and. All week, I spoke about how good this Man City team is. And I wasn't blowing hot air up their ass because we were playing them. And Steve knows this. I said it on the Big Six to everyone. I said, respect this team. We are a crack outfit, but so are they. And this wasn't done. What Mo Salah done in that second half, people, wasn't against your Burnley or Southampton at home and he thought, all right, let's just raise the... Put, you know, let's just light the switch and then let's go second half. Let's raise it. This is, and I've said it, this is probably the best team in the world. along with us, you know, either one of us. These are world-class players that he literally tore to shred in that second half. And I'm willing to say near enough single-handedly, because as good as Mane's goal was, I don't think he was brilliant again.
No,
he wasn't. Good as Jota's industrious he was, industry. I don't think he was brilliant. Bobby, when he came on, was awful. Mohamed Salah, guys, there was often times when Stevie G decided, oh, fuck off. I'm not having this. Do you remember when he turned around in the second half against, help me out, Keith.
Who are you talking about, Salah?
In Europe, Stevie G, when he turned around at halftime and he went and scored a hat-trick in the second half on his
Marseille, own. Marseille, was it?
No. It was at home. It was a champ. It was a European
Napoli, night, someone in the Europa League.
Napoli, yeah.
That's it. There you go, Quizmaster. This was on that level, but on another level, because of the opposition. And as Gav says, people on the floor—they weren't ordinary players. This was Bernardo Silva, who has had a, for me, probably was man of the match. You know, I thought he was unplayable at times. We're talking about Cancelo. For me, one of the best fullbacks in Europe. We're talking about Laporte. And then we're talking about Ederson. You know how often we talk about our defense and how hard it is to get through Fabinho? And then you're faced with a fucking Robertson or a Virgil or whatever. And then you're faced with an Alisson. This brother collects the ball, players around him. And one of the most irritating things that you hear about, or frustrating things that you hear about Mohamed Salah's criticism is, he's not very good technically. He's not a great dribbler. Go and watch that goal and sit down.
I think
just take a seat, because that first drag he does, that drag back,
the roll,
that's calmness personified in a tight area. And it was very similar to the Spurs goal. Do you remember, guys? He scored
It's better than the Spurs goal.
But I was going to say
that was in my head as well, Grizz. Yeah, that was in my head as well.
But this is even better, Keith. And as Steve says, that right footed, it was a blast from his right foot. So he's shown his development that everyone talks about. Oh, he cuts in and he puts it in. He's shown he can do both now. And that will make defenders shit themselves even more, because every defender started showing him inside. Sorry, outside. Go outside, go outside. They won't be showing him outside now, because they know he can do that. And some people were criticizing Ederson, but he was gone before he had a chance to raise his hands.
Yeah,
he was an absolute bullet.
No, they showed
it was a Barclays moment.
They showed Barclays. It's the second Barclays moment.
The second one there.
since 2012. But the thing about it is that, and you're right what you say, you know, is he technically this? Is he technically that? You know, he uses pace. He's direct. But if you watch the goal back, and like, in fairness to him, the players he beats off, like Bernardo Silva was brilliant today. I've no time for Bernardo Silva. But he was very, very good today, I thought. Really, really good. But when you watch him, the ball comes in, he bounces off a player, he takes it away, he takes another touch, and then it's just, he rolls it with his left foot and he's touched with his right foot. So nobody can go near him. Because he's touched with his right foot, nobody can touch him, because he's put it away from an area of players. Now, they were struggling because they were all on the fucking ground looking at him. But then he breaks into the box and puts on his left foot, and immediately you see the defender thinks, and you're right what you're saying, the defender thinks when he puts on his left foot, he's going to go for that bend into the top corner, which he's done on numerous occasions. And then he just drops the shoulder, a bit like he done to Koulibaly, if you remember, in the Champions League against Napoli. And he's done it at home to Watford very early in the game. I think it might be in 17, 18. And he just leaves them on the ground, because not only is he faked well, but he has that burst where he's just gone past you. And even if you're the best defender in the world, or you're one of the best defenders in the world, he's gone past you to the point where he only needs a millisecond now, because he's that quick. And he's quick at thinking, and the burst of speed, and then the finish, like Steve said, he's in row four, he's looking at it, and it's just, the keeper hasn't a hope. It's gone by him before he can even react, and it actually licks the post on the way in as well. That's how close it is. But it's an absolutely wonderful goal, and people would say it'd be fit to win a game, possibly 9 times out of 10, but it wasn't. But if you're out there as a football fan, and I'm not only saying this to Liverpool fans, or if you're out there as a football fan and you don't think Salah is possibly the best player in the world right now, I don't know what to do with you. I really don't, because he just keeps turning up week after week after week, and he's doing stuff where he's done something today that you just go, you're picking your jar up off the ground after. It was ridiculous, but it's 2-1 to Liverpool, and you know what, Steve, we talked about it earlier. After the first goal, there's men around you saying, you know, that's it, the crowd are up. And look, if the crowd are up after the first, Steve, the crowd are absolutely, you know, pulling the place down after the second, because not only it's gone 2-1, but that sort of goal. I'm not too impressed with Liverpool with the equaliser. I think Joe Gomez doesn't get tight enough. I think when the ball breaks out, De Bruyne is there in his own. Where are our midfielders to break it down? And then I feel a bit sorry for Matip, but in fairness, De Bruyne is there. He hits it well. And like you said, Steve, earlier, it's just, it is a sign that there's something different maybe about City this season, because I felt over the last season or two that City are quite easy to get at. If you get the better of them over a certain amount of time in a game and you get ahead of them, particularly with Liverpool, I think you can get at them and you can hurt them. But fair play to them, Steve. They came back and they get that goal. A bit fortuitous at the end, but they get it.
Yeah, there was a stat the other day me and Grizz was looking at, which was a mad one. I think City had only faced 6 shots in 6 games in the Premier League. So we've been good, you know what I mean? But it was good to see De Bruyne be there or thereabouts. I think he's very, very tired at the minute, Kevin. I don't think anything he's trying is coming off. He's definitely not the De Bruyne from last season. So I think he needs a rest. But as soon as we got that goal, I knew then, I thought, we're not getting beat in this game. Maybe we can go and win it. I thought Sterling did all right, and I've been one of Sterling's. I've not criticised him as such. I've just said, for me, we can sell him because
can I ask you that, just on a bit of a tangent? Where is Sterling's future? Because I get the feeling like he's being slowly phased out of Man City.
Well, listen, if Pep's tried him in the 9, if all of a sudden he becomes the 9, and he's doing well, then that's his position. Because he's definitely not getting in ahead of Foden. He's definitely not getting in ahead of Grealish. And I think Sterling, with his ego and that, he thinks, he probably does deserve to be the main man somewhere. So for me, he's a great player, and what he's done for Man City, he's brilliant and fantastic. But I just think Pep's trying to squeeze him in somewhere, anywhere he can, and it's not working. I mean, he came on today and I thought he was better at pressing, and he put you on the back foot a little bit more than what Grealish did. So today, I can't say anything, but going forward, I think that if we can sell Sterling and invest the money in a striker position, or even get 2 strikers, that would suit us better, because we've got Ferran Torres can play on the left, Grealish plays on the left, Foden can play on the left. We're Sterling's just sort of, you know, hanging about now. I don't know where he fits in.
Yeah, it's a strange one. And, you know, there's no love lost for Raheem Sterling when it comes to Liverpool fans. And, you know, some of that is justified. Some of it, in my opinion, is not. I think he was led completely the wrong way by his agent over what he done and how he exited Liverpool, and City took advantage of that. But when I look at it, when I look at the way City tried to play today, and they're trying to outnumber you by literally doing more or less what Spain used to do. Do you remember this 4-6-0 thing where they'd literally put it out as a 4-3-3, but it was literally 4-6 because they were just going to make that 6 players be a unit where they were going to win, overrun you, and then try break. And I think Sterling's made for that. I think if you were to play, and I'm not a Man City fan, so I'm not, you know them better than me, but when I look around and you see, Grealish is going to play, Foden is definitely going to play, I'd have Sterling in as the third man. I really would, and I probably would put him through the middle, and I'd just keep switching Foden and Grealish all the time. And I just say to Sterling, you just keep pressing. The only thing that does it for him is his finishing. I think if he's a slightly better finisher, I think you'd probably see him in the 9 a bit more, but there'd be no shortage of takers for Raheem Sterling if he was to leave Man City. But
against Paris the other night, Kevin De Bruyne put an outside of the boot ball, pinpoint on his head, 4 yards from goal, and he hit the bar. And it's like, in them games of that magnitude, if you're the main striker for Manchester City, that's got to be in. Mm. You know what I mean? And that's his decision making. When he's off form, his decision making is very poor. He takes too many touches. He tries to cut in the wrong way instead of the right way. And he just becomes a frustrated figure. But when it's going for him, you've had him at your place. When it's going for him, You know, he's quality, but I just think at the minute it's not going for him. He's not going to play second fiddle on the bench because he thinks he's better than that. He is better than that. But, you know, for me, if we could sell him, I'd sell him.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Owen Bourke reckons if Kane had a sign for City, Sterling would have left. That's what his feelings on. And maybe something would have come, but Sterling's on a lot of money.
That's the problem.
He's 26 years of age, is he? Is he around 26 years of age, Raheem Sterling?
26, 27,
I think. So he's in his prime. He has probably two big contracts left in him. And you know, it's
26.
It's all very well saying you want to sign Raheem Sterling, but he's on massive money at Manchester City. And then you have to go and pay him that. And then you have to pay the fee for him and stuff like that. And I don't know. Where does he end up?
Well, that's a massive question. We asked that as well the other day. Where does he end up? Like,
I said Arsenal. I think he's made for Arsenal.
I think he'd be fucking mad.
Spurs get mentioned a lot as well, don't they? But I think they're not in a position to get him, I don't think. They're not attractive at the moment.
No, Barca's the one for him.
I have more money than Barcelona.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake.
No, watch them. I'm telling you, Barcelona.
Yeah, well, that does talk. There's talk of there's investment coming, isn't there? Into Barcelona to sort them out. But it's an interesting one because every time Raheem Sterling's name comes up, you get it. You know, would Liverpool fans take him back at Anfield? And it kind of splits opinion. I think it does split opinion a bit, Chris. I think
it does. Yeah.
But I think there's too much water passed under that bridge, for that to ever happen. Chelsea would be more of an option for me because Spurs are going nowhere. Like, they're just fucking treading water somewhere. And Arsenal, give me strength, will you? You know what I mean? For fuck's sake, you want to be off your rocker, you know what I mean? And he's a much better player than Arsenal are at the moment. Arsenal have showed signs, but you know, they were dominated by a Brighton side there yesterday for me.
Don't start on my second team for no reason.
That's just the truth, you know. But look, it's one of those. But, you know, we have that incident at the end where Fabinho looks like he should score, but it's a brilliant tackle by Rodri, in fairness to him. I was going to say, we attempted to see a penalty and Rodri get booked, or we attempted to jump on the pitch and tackle Fabinho yourself.
Once Edison missed it, it seemed to happen in slow motion and he dropped to the feet of Fabinho and I'm literally there and I thought, wow, he's just rolling it in the empty net. We've dropped a right bollock. And then Rodri out of nowhere just blocked it. So I think we celebrated that in our end like it was a last minute winner because I think it was a tremendous tackle, you know what I mean?
Do you think he could have hit a fourth time?
Should have.
Say again.
Do you think he could have hit a fourth time?
Yeah, but I think he thought he had that much time. And he did when you look at it.
Yeah.
If he'd have lifted the ball higher, instead of trying to roll it in, if he'd have lifted it 2 feet, it'd have got over Rodri's leg. He wouldn't have been able to block it. But listen, I actually just came in and I saw the clip when I was on the Sky Sports News and it was unbelievable. Just don't know how he got it. But yeah, that's when you know, it's becoming our day.
Well,
Gav, it epitomised both players, like in terms of Edison and Fabinho. Because Fabinho, you know, when he's having an off game, he always seems a yard slower than he actually is, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And that was a case of just not doing things quicker. And Edison, I done a brilliant tweet during the game where I spoke about you know, we as Liverpool fans we often praise Alisson's ability on the ball, and I said it's not a patch on Edison as a goalkeeper. Alisson's the better goalkeeper.
Edison's overall a footballer,
but Edison's ability on the ball is outrageous. Absolutely outrageous.
But did you see that pass?
Oh no, it's outrageous.
It's not just a boom. He passes it. Do you know what I mean? His reputation for just having a cannon to blade.
I went to Schalke 2 years ago in the Champions League. In the last minute, he launched it the length of the pitch. It landed right on Raheem Sterling's foot. He just rounded the keeper and scored. It was unbelievable.
It's very similar to Gav's golf You know, it's a lovely touch, because you should watch Gav's golf. What's it called? Pitch. What would you call that? A pitch shot, right, Gav?
Pitch.
Not a drive.
No, Ederson to Sterling or Schalke is probably like he kind of drives that. It's
really.
Yeah, it's not a loopy kind of shot. It's a good.
I thought that's a par three. Like,
no, it's a six iron.
You know Ederson. You know Ederson would get in the Man United midfield. In it.
Yeah, but I'd get into Man United midfield, so that's not a huge claim.
But listen, that's enough praise for Edison, because that's what I meant by overall keeper as well, is he has mad moments.
Yeah.
He's very erratic. And that was an example of suddenly nearly losing the game for City when they shouldn't have lost. Was that near enough the last couple of minutes, wasn't it?
And that
would have been amazing. Like, you know, he was so good. Everyone talking about his distribution. That pass was one of the, you know, if that led to a goal, that would have been another Barclays moment, by the way.
The guy has got a screw loose, yeah? When City won the league the first time, Ederson, he had his Instagram live on or something. The guy was doing backflips in his swimming pool at 4 a.m. with bottles of Corona. And the Corona was filling up with like chloride, and he was just drinking it. And then he was getting back out, jumping back in. And the guy must have kept thinking his beer was full. He was drinking pure pool water. And I thought, that's my goalkeeper. He's just won the league. He's 20 odd year old. He's doing backflips in his pool with bottles of Corona. That is exactly what I'd be doing if I was him. And I thought, the guy's a legend, but he's just one of the boys. He's mad. But he does give us a different. He gives us a level that not a lot of goalkeepers can do. And sometimes when we get impressed, Ederson's so cool to get us out. It's unbelievable.
And that's a huge thing for you, because, and we're all goalkeepers now, you know, that there's an extra element to goalkeepers. Alisson's good with his feet. He's really good distribution. Not only like ball at his feet, but Elvis hands, good throws, good kicks. You know, you see for Salah last season before last at home to United when Salah goes through and scores near at the cop end. But it's a huge thing. But when it drops over his head today and it drops to Fabinho, you said it earlier, Steve, it's like slow motion. And I'm like, is he putting it in the fucking net here? Or what are we waiting for here? You know, are we waiting for a signal? And but in fairness to Rodri, he just throws himself there. And like you said, if Fabinho doesn't think he's that much time, I think he traps it and buries it. But I think he traps it and takes that extra little, just that half second to compose himself, and then Rodri's in. And to be honest with you, I'd have loved it to go in. That's very, very obvious. But when afterwards you kind of go, you know what? It's 2-2. It's a draw. I think it's fair. You know, and sometimes fairness kind of has to go over that kind of tribalism where you say, fuck, we didn't get it. And I would have loved it to go in, because last minute, Fabinho, brilliant. And, you know, Liverpool are gone top and stuff like that. But you kind of go after go, you know, it's a 2-2 draw. It's cool. Before we finish, lads, man of the match, Keith. You can go either team here if you want, because we have Steve on.
Yeah, no, I won't. I'll go with Mo Salah. Just ahead of Joel Matip for me, because I thought Matip was excellent. But Salah has the moments. Do you know what I mean? Like, you said something, Gav, about he's the Suarez debate has gone. I think there's a Steven Gerrard debate now to be had with Mo Salah. I think he's fast becoming. At this moment in time, I think he's an argument to be our greatest Premier League player. And I think if he sticks around and continues on this trajectory, he could be our greatest ever player. And we've had illustrious players in our history. What this fucker is doing now is, you know, his game is improving year on year, which is what you want to see. He's evolving. This year, he's more rounded. We said it before. He's working harder. He's digging out at the back. You know, when the defenders are getting caught upfield, he's coming back. His game is just improving all the time. I think he was amazing today. I know people would say, without the goal, was he great? He was great for the first goal as well, but he has the moments. I thought Matip's 90 minutes was better, but Salah had the moments, so I'm going for Salah.
No problem. Steve, man of the match for you.
Well, I just caught on the TV, they gave a joint man of the match today on the TV. They gave it Foden and Salah.
Yeah, Salah.
They can't separate them. I've never seen that before.
Neither have I.
So they've given that. For me, listen, I could give it Salah. Yeah, I could give it Foden. But I'm going to give it Bernardo. I just thought the little guy's engine, especially after the week he's had, Chelsea away, Paris away. And, you know, he's finally playing in the middle now. Last season, he was forced out wide. He wanted to leave. It's not his position out wide. We don't get the best of him. We just saw Pep Guardiola just pigeonholed him out there. Now you're getting the best of Bernardo Silva. I mean, today, I'm sure if you ask any of them Liverpool midfielders today, I bet they were saying he was like a wasp. You know what I mean? He was just round and buzzing everywhere. So for me, for City, it was Bernardo, followed closely by Phil. And obviously for Liverpool, it was Salah.
Yeah. Bernardo Silva, I think, you know what? And I think what a lot of Liverpool supporters looked at Bernardo Silva and went, what a fucking player. But I think when he stood at the Etihad with the cup of coffee in his hand, when Liverpool came out for that, I think a lot of Liverpool fans went, you know what? There's been a great player and then there's been a bit of a fucking idiot. And I don't know if he regrets that or I don't know if he thinks anything of it. But I think he went down in a lot of Liverpool fans' estimations as a person when he done that. Now, I'm not saying it's the biggest thing in the world, but, you know, stand there with the jacket on and the cup of coffee, it's like, you know, it's a bit, lacks a bit of class for me, you know, and maybe it's a sign of his mentality where I'm going, fuck you, so I don't care about you winning the league, I'll be back, you know, sort of way. But as a footballer, he's so fucking good. He's so good. I think you're right. You limit him when he's out wide, because when he's out wide on that left foot, a lot of teams can look at him and go, we just push him into the middle of the park. We push him.
What we do is
we just constantly push him out wide and we keep banking and go outside and we'll hurt him. When you put him in a midfield three, he can go anywhere he wants. And not only is that, I think the biggest thing that comes from Bernardo Silva is his work rate. His work rate for a player that's meant to be...
He's a ratty little fucker. Yeah, he's always there.
Yeah, for a player that's meant to be, you know, good on the ball, you know, graceful on the ball, glides with the ball, he works so fucking hard. And I think that's the extra element that he brings to other midfielders that you would see. But that might have the same technical ability, but the work rate from him is just is unbelievable.
Just something on Bernardo Silva. Again, if Harvey Elliott, and of course he'd be watching that game.
Yeah.
That is the kind of performance, because similar physique, definitely same position. That was, because I'll tell you why that was a great performance, Bernardo Silva. All those things, Gav, because what you said, because he is a little runt. He's an absolute little bastard. He is. But every team, no, but he's one of those that the opposition winds up.
I'd be definitely giving him a slap in the head.
The amount of abuse he must have got, Steve, you was at the game. Every touch he was booed. When he came out, he was booed. And to put in a shift and performance like that, you've got to be special. That, you know, a lot of people, for example, we spoke about Raheem Sterling, can't take the heat. Can't take the heat like that. But this kid, as much as of a rat, and I'd slap the... As soon as you slapped him, Gav, I'd slap him the other way around back.
It'd be a personal moment.
I actually seen something about that cup of coffee incident where he said he didn't know that he had to do the guard of honour because he wasn't playing. He was on the bench and he came out with his coffee and they were like, you need to line up. So he was just sort of there and just went, fuck this, and walked off. Yeah, it was disrespectful. But anyone that knows the guy, obviously in-house, we're on the City squad, he's a bit of a, I don't think he's that kind of guy. They bully him a little bit. He's always getting slung in the swimming pool, his clothes getting cut up, he's getting thrown in the fire, and he's just one of them little guys. But I think he'd probably regret that. But like you say, the Liverpool fans was on him a little bit. I get that, because if he'd have done that against us, I'd have been the same. Yeah. But he had a great game today, and he's had a great game in Paris. He had a great game at Chelsea. But he wants to leave. It's an open fact. He wants to leave. Not because he doesn't like City. It's a lifestyle choice, I'm led to believe. I think he's a sun man. He likes his Portuguese weather, his Spain weather.
Would you not get him on the sunbeds and have a whip around?
We need to keep him. You know what I mean? So, I was saying to a guy the other day, I said, some players are cut from different cloth. I mean, David Silva came over here from Gran Canaria and he just took to it and thought, you know what, I'm going to have to put up with rain, sleet and snow in Manchester for 10 years, but I will leave a legend. Mm. Now he's got a statue. Aguero the same. He spent most of his time in his house playing video games, but he got the job done. Bernardo, you know, he might just be one of them guys that needs to float about on a lilo somewhere, you know what I mean? That's him. But I wish him his best. But if he can give us a good season this year and we can get some trophies and he leaves with my blessing.
Grizz, man of the match for you.
Yeah, look, after giving a big up to Bernardo Silva. Magnificent. I thought Foden was out of this world. And I kind of knew he's going to be. You know, in terms of talking about kids around the world, the best kids, Foden is up there with any young under 23 player in the world. And I mean that. He's that good. But Mohamed Salah for that second half performance, when we weren't great, when we needed one of our big dogs to stand up, my God, that brother stood up and made everyone fall down around him. Mohamed Salah.
Okay. Red Steve has a suggestion. He says, could you just get Steve to follow Bernardo Silva around? Because Steve apparently is a little ray of sunshine.
Isn't no problem,
Diego. Isn't that a lovely thing to say? Steve just hanging around Bernardo Silva going, I am your sunshine. It'd be fucking amazing.
People that watch me on the Big Six show, Grizz, honestly.
Ray of sunshine. Fuck.
They get the ray of... Someone said, when I see Grizz on all these channels, Steve on all these channels, he talks well about football. And then next minute, he's blowing the gasket on the Big Six show.
I think that's Red Steve. Was it Red Steve earlier that said he broke some furniture when the first goal went in? And obviously, he's on his way to IKEA tomorrow to rectify that situation. But look, man of the match for me, I have to go with Salah because it's just the moments he gives you, and you know, I can go back. I'll probably watch this game again. I usually watch them twice, once when it's live, second time then probably tonight or tomorrow, and it's much easier to watch when you watch it a second time because the emotion's gone over, you know what happened, and you're watching not patterns of play or anything like that. I'm not like that, but I watch little things for just how a player's playing, or how did they do this, how did they do that, and just to learn, I suppose, when you're watching football. But when I'm sitting there and I'm saying to myself, oh, 75 minutes, here we go, and you're just waiting for that, you're just waiting for it to watch it again and again. I've seen it 100 times already, and you just can't stop watching it because of the skill, the power, the pace, the finish, everything about it. But in fairness, City put as much into this game today as Liverpool did, and you know, the Foden goal is really good, and we've mentioned Bernardo Silva, and some of the players were magnificent today. And for me, Liverpool were probably 6 or 7 out of 10 and survived a very hairy 30 minutes, but then came out and showed what they're about. And as I said, me and Steve were talking for 10 minutes before we come on here, and the only thing we could say between the two of us was the level you've seen today at certain times is just way above, for me, what you see in the Premier League on a regular basis. And I include Chelsea are currently sitting top. I don't think Chelsea, all things being equal, get near Liverpool and Man City simply because of consistency and the players they have and what they can do to you. So it's one of those. But it's been a really, really, really good show. One shout out there, somebody said really liked the Billy Little video that was out the other day from Keith. Did you enjoy that, Keith?
I did enjoy it, Gav. Yeah, you know me. I love talking about old-fashioned stuff, you know, black and white football. Big fan of all that. And, yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a good little show. If anyone hasn't watched it, it was just about a lad's book coming out, P. Kenny Jones, and it's coming out soon about Billy Little being 100. And just reading back over, there's not footage of people who played in the 40s and 50s, you know what I mean? So you just read stories about them and you appreciate the players, the older players that, as we said in the show, you know, some of these players are at risk of being forgotten about. You know, history doesn't remember people before the Premier League started, never mind the 1950s, you know. But
yeah, no,
it was enjoyable.
It was a really good show, and that's on our YouTube channel. It's there. It's a couple of days old now, but it's a really good 45 minutes or so about Little, and he would have been 100 now. So all about his career, and well done to Pete on the book, and it's coming out early November.
I've just got to say, guys, one thing. Yeah, I've got to give a big shout out to the stewards in the City End today because they were bang on. Yeah, and there was a guy next to me. He must have been 80-odd years old, walking stick, couldn't see. Stood up our first half next to me, couldn't see. And then we had a word with the steward and said, look, there's a fella here. He can't see. He stood up with a walking stick. He's obviously... And they went, no problem. They moved him to the disabled section. They took him for a drink. They sat him down. At the end of the game, he looked absolutely made up. So, listen, I know that doesn't happen at other grounds. They just have been palmed him off. But they were really bent over backwards today. And a lot of stewards get shit, yeah? Because, oh, the stewards are this and that. But today, 100% fair play what they did there today. Everyone was raving about that.
Yeah, and that's nice to see, especially for a man that's probably gone and watched City all his life. And, you know,
I couldn't believe where he was. I thought, if City score here, he's dead. Anyway, at half time, he was next minute. I seen him, he's on a padded seat, he's got a drink, he was living the dream. He probably was having me at it, he could probably see all along, but he just,
you know, 27 years old,
with a load
of makeup on him.
He was probably sitting where the sun was shining, and Bernardo Silva was going mad over it, in fairness. No, it's been a really, really, really good show. And listen, a massive thanks to Steve for coming on and joining us, because he literally left Anfield, travelled home, and literally came in the door and stuck this feed on for us. So fair play to him. Grizz, anything else before we go?
No, just a bit of time to recover. As you know, and a few others know, the continuation of the crash diet continues.
Yeah, you sent us a picture.
We discussed that on another show.
Yeah, you sent us a picture the other day of what you called soup. And if it was soup, you're in serious fucking trouble with
our meal. I thought it was a bowl in a sink of dirty water. That was the soup.
It was absolutely
But this is what you got. Listen, this is what you got to get through. This is the struggle, my brother.
I'll get
on to you for the recipe.
Don't be worrying about it. You're doing a liquid diet. You don't do that. Just do a calorie deficit diet and you'll be absolutely fine with a bit of exercise.
Can you stop with the advice, please?
No, I'm flying.
Every week is on a... Right,
well, I'm not flying. Right, I'm flying now because I'm on Guinness.
4 days.
But no, honestly, I'm a week into it now. Calorie deficit diet and a bit of exercise every evening and I feel amazing. Absolutely.
Well, we motivate each other. We'll track our results.
Well, you don't motivate me when you send me bowls of fucking dishwater and you tell me you're drinking it or you're eating it, whatever way you want to put it.
But sorry, I'm just having my dinner.
Okay, cool. Yeah, with that delivery or at the door, I'd say.
100%.
Keith, anything else before we go?
Yeah, if people are upset about James Milner not getting sent off today, the Super Classico was on tonight with River playing Boca Juniors. And on 15 minutes, Marcos Rojo got a yellow card.
Yeah,
and on 16 minutes, Marcos Rojo got a second yellow card and got sent off after 16 minutes. So, you know, it's not the worst fucking yellow card story of the day. Marcos Rojo just lives up to being Marcos Rojo again. And River Plate 1-2-1.
Good stuff. Steve, anything else before you go? Anything you'd like to mention, plug, do whatever you want, but go ahead.
I'm new to the YouTube game. I've got my own channel at Big Steve MCFC. So if you want to follow me on there, follow me. Me and Grizz did a little preview. It's gone down well. And obviously catch me on the Big Six tomorrow with Grizz. It's always lively. But don't expect a nice, calm Steve that you see on there. It's totally different on there. It's dog eat dog.
Yeah, we're good for you, Steve. We're good for you.
Right, yeah, I enjoy it on it. It's like a little like therapy for me. You can talk normal. Real football. When I'm on the Big Six, you get involved in all sorts of bullshit.
Yeah. That's because he's on.
I'll tell you what, we rattle each other. We proper rattle each other.
I don't know if anybody's seen the episode with Toby. Toby, the Tottenham fan, he left the North London derby after 44 minutes. Now, for me, I'm cut from different cloth. If I go to a derby game,
I ain't leaving,
whether I'm 6-8 nil down. So I give it him that much. It was a live funeral. The casket was laid open. He was rolled in it and buried. Chris, it was hard watching, wasn't it? So.
Proper order.
You're welcome on here anytime. Even if you want to drop in and just chat random football. Or
no, I appreciate it. I enjoy it. Thank you.
Good stuff. And we enjoy having you. And again, thanks for the effort you made tonight. Listen, it's international break. And when international break comes, I told you, we're the best at international breaks because it means we don't have to exclusively talk about football. We can have a good time. The forum is back tomorrow, though. They're going to be talking all things football and probably a lot about today. Tuesday, I'm not too sure. We might fit something like a quiz in there. Wednesday is definitely the midweek fix. We're definitely going to have that. Thursday is Carnage. Friday is Sports Unplugged. And of course, we'll be off for the weekend, bar the Fatback Four. The Fatback Four next week will be a little bit different. And me and Andy are definitely having a chat Tuesday week. That's all I'll tell you. Me and Andy are definitely having a chat on Tuesday week. But if you want some quizzes, you want some drafts, or you want some randomness, just let us know. Get onto us on social media and let us know, because genuinely, anything goes in international break, for us to have a bit of crack every night. That has been the fat back for a little bit over time, but we've had a lovely, lovely chat about Liverpool 2, Man City 2. Liverpool remain unbeaten, and you thought about getting away with it until De Bruyne scored, but overall, I think it was a fair result. Over now. Sports Social Podcast Network.